And ask Dr. Dennison to have the roll call.
Dr. Philip Bale?
Present.
Ms. Kiana Boca? Ms. Cynthia Harris? Mr. Freddie Higdon?
Here.
Mr. Gil Johnson?
Here.
Mr. James Kennedy?
Present.
Dr. Patricia Minter?
Present.
Mr. David Porter?
Present.
Mr. John Ridley?
Here.
Mr. Larry Zelke?
Here.
Thank you. I think all the board members have received copies of the minutes of the first quarterly meeting. There are no questions. I will ask for a motion to approve those minutes. So moved. Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Call the question. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimously accepted.
Do that roll call once again real quick here. Just one of them.
Ms. Kiana Boca?
Yes.
President Ransdell has some informational items and comments.
I do. Several things have occurred since we met as committees a few weeks ago. And so I'm going to hit several things very, very quickly here. Maybe the most compelling in some cases tragic, but in some cases compelling, was the closing this week, or the announcement of the closing of Mid-Continent University in Mayfield, Kentucky. They have, I think, 800 or 900 full-time students, but about over 2,000 part-time and full-time students. We're trying to get a handle on those numbers. But this is a symptom of a lot of dynamics in higher education that a lot of institutions are dealing with, especially small private institutions that struggle in many ways. Mid-Continent has had some accreditation challenges in recent years and a whole range of financial and other difficulties, and their board took action this week to close, and now their faculty and staff are volunteering through graduation in May so that those that are on track to graduate can do so. So I'm going to pass this around. Julia, if you'll bring it to the other side when it gets to you. I really want to commend Provost Emsley and Brian Meredith and Sharon Hunter, Stacy Biggs, Beth Lavis, and Lord knows a whole host of others that have been at work the last 36 hours. This was announced on Thursday. Preparing to embrace those students. Gordon will go into more details in his report, but we need to be there to a large measure for their faculty and their students, and we intend to do that. So that's just something that I wanted to make you aware of, and we'll be keeping you informed as that phenomenon unfolds in the weeks and months ahead. Since we last met, our forensics team captured the American Forensics Association and National Championship back on April, actually April 7 was when that championship was earned, and they are competing this week in the National Forensics Association Championship. So our forensics team went 2 years without winning a national championship, finished second both times, so we're back on track where we belong as national forensics champions. So great job by our forensics team. The Gatton Academy of Math and Science was named on April 14th by the Washington Post as one of the top performing schools with elite students for the sixth consecutive year. Gatton Academy continues to perform at a very high national level. Chad Comer, who is here today, has won two prestigious national scholarships to study and conduct HIV research in the United Kingdom, the biology and chemistry major. Apparently you'll learn more about Chad later in the agenda today. But he's been accepted into the National Institutes of Health Oxford-Cambridge Scholars Program to pursue a doctorate in virology at the University of Oxford while conducting HIV research at Oxford and with the NIH. So Great job, Chad, and so many others that I think you're going to learn more about. We had four students nominated for Goldwaters. All four were recognized. I think you're going to probably hear more about that in the agenda. Our civil engineers won the regional conference, in the Ohio Valley Regional Conference at Carnegie Mellon University, finishing first. And I don't understand all of this, although I went over and met with them all, and they showed me all of their things that they made and competed with. We finished first in concrete horseshoe, concrete softball bat, balsa wood bridge building, surveying, and civil site design competition, and placed third overall in the steel bridge competition, which does qualify us for the national competition in steel bridge building. So great performance by our civil engineers. Students, radio, and students, faculty, and staff received numerous honors in the Kentucky Press Broadcasters Awards that were announced early in April. A whole list of students and faculty that won first places in Best Newscast, Best Feature, Best News Story, Best Sports Coverage, and on and on. Great, great performance by our students and staff with the WKYU PBS. Jessica Ramsey, a senior on our track and field team last weekend at the Hilltopper Relays, broke her own school record and Sunbelt Conference record by more than 2 feet in the shot put, now owns the nation's longest 57 feet, 4.75 inches in women's shot put in America. She's now ranked number one in America in women's shot put with her performance last weekend at the Hilltopper Relays. Terrific performance on her part. Princeton Review's guide to 332 green colleges. We are one of them, so call up Princeton Review, and I've got the material here if you'd like to read more about it. But once again, we're named on the list of green colleges and universities, and that's out of all universities in America, and pretty cool recognition for our sustainability efforts. And finally, Big Red placed third in the nation at the prestigious National Cheerleaders Association National Dance Alliance Championships in Daytona Beach, Florida last week. So how about Big Red? That's the good news for the day. Thanks.
Before we start the reports, I would like to thank Robin Taylor and her colleagues and President Ransdell and all of the board members. And I know there have been faculty and staff that have been active in pushing with the legislature for Western's benefit. And probably I know some other people that are in the Hilltopper Nation that is probably a big group. And I think it brought a bad situation to a better situation with the ups and downs of this legislature. So I think we all should be proud of the support and spirit of the administration, the board, and the staff, and everyone connected with Western. And especially the delegations that we've all spoken with.
I agree. You'll hear from Robin later in the executive committee report, but absolutely, and I want to thank the board members who played an important role. I know Gil particularly got pretty engaged in helping get our agenda before, particularly leadership, and proved to be important, and thank all of you.
Thank you. The committees, the board, met on March 28, and each item of each committee was discussed on the agenda. And with the exception of items 2.2 and 2.3 under the executive committee agenda and report, those are the only exceptions. So these items are exempt from the consent agenda and shall be discussed and voted on separately, the 2.2 and 2.3.
Minutes. We need to back up and do the minutes.
Okay. And you've received the minutes that were circulated, and I'll ask for a motion to approve those.
Move approve.
I thought we did, but I thought maybe I had brain lapse.
He did. I missed it. I'm sorry. I was out. My bad. Okay. I apologize.
Okay. You're so good when we're proven twice.
There were no objections. It's
on the record now. Thank you.
It's always a good rule to follow, to respond to you. So.
I'm sorry.
Well, I guess we kind of ratified those. Or ready for
yeah, second reading.
Academic Affairs, Regent Bale.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me start out by saying that for those of us that were fortunate enough to be at last night's Academic Scholarship Banquet, it was quite a performance. The video performance that the students put together was terrific and reminds all of us how important it is to have those scholarships and the community support. And while this morning I didn't have a chance to tell the provost, but at our next meeting we need to show that video to everybody. It was really terrific.
Yeah, let's make that note. Let's bring that video to our June meeting and let those board members see that who weren't there last night.
Good. Thank you.
At our committee meetings, we had some great discussions, great presentations, and we have seven items for action on our agenda this morning. And if there is any item that we wish to remove, I would ask for that right now.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to have action item 1.7 removed from the consent agenda to the action agenda for proper recognition of our emeritus faculty.
Have a motion to remove item 1.7. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. We will now consider items 1 through 1.6. I'll consider a motion for consent approval of those six items.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Like sign. All right. That leaves item 1.7. And Regent Minter,
okay.
I'll turn it over to you.
I believe Dr. Peterson is here. And is Dr. Poe here? Well, I'm going to start with Dr. Poe. It is an honor to speak a little bit this morning about two of my colleagues who I've known and worked with since I came here in 1993. And I have to start by saying this is the first meeting I ever went to where Retta Poe's name was on the agenda and she wasn't there because she has been a stalwart of the governance system ever since I can remember. Dr. Poe retired as a professor of psychology and served the department, college, and university with distinction. In addition to her work as a psychology professor, which was outstanding, I'll talk about what I know her better as. She worked as an associate dean in the College of Educational and Behavioral Sciences, but I knew her as the first woman chair of the Academic Council, which was one of the governance precursors to the current University Senate. And I had the distinct privilege of working with Dr. Poe as my first leadership role on campus was as chair of the General Education Committee when I was still an untenured faculty member, and Dr. Poe was the chair. There are people who are masters of the legislative process, and she was certainly one of those, as good at it as anybody who ever worked their way through Congress or the halls of the General Assembly. And I learned so much from her, including that it was very okay when you knew something was wrong and didn't need to happen to do everything that you could to rally the troops to make sure that a change that would harm faculty and academics did not happen. She taught me how to do that, and I am forever grateful to her and for the role model she provided, which was if there's a meeting, you're there. And you might need to do something, and you might not need to do something, but you're there every step of the way, and you know how the process works up and down. Retta Poe has made so many contributions to faculty governance on this campus and the status of women generally on this campus, and for that, I and many others are forever in her debt. I wish her very well as she moves into a much deserved retirement. And I owe John Peterson something, too. Dr. Peterson came to WKU in 1969 as a faculty member in what was then the Department of Government. But I knew him as the Associate Vice President for Academic Affairs, and he interviewed me when I came here as a job applicant. And at the time, we had a lot of interesting conversations about England, a place that we both had a passion for. And at that meeting, and he may not remember this, but he talked to me about all the opportunities for study abroad, and I didn't take him up on it until 2000 when I did my first study abroad with the CCSA program, and it was because you talked me into doing it. And I'm forever grateful for that. It's been a marvelous, marvelous opportunity for me and for countless other faculty. And the current state of international education and study abroad owes more than they can ever repay to you, because this was your passion and your vision, as was Latin American Studies, which continues to be a robust team taught course on this campus. And I wish you very well in your retirement. I move for approval.
Second. Do I hear a second for approval? Motion and a second for approval of our faculty emeritus status for the two individuals presented. Further discussion or comments?
I think I asked this once before. And the recognition is nice. Is there any other tangible benefit for having this distinction that the university grants?
Yes, emeritus faculty are accorded the privilege of teaching at an enhanced compensation level compared to other part-time faculty, and are welcome to participate in other university activities.
Sure. Understand.
Actually, we just had a luncheon day before yesterday for emerita faculty, most of whom have long been retired, but who came back, and it was a great event. Great event. We did that Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Eggleton, but it's also the rank of emeriti is noted in the catalog as well, right? It's part of our record. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah. Right.
Any other questions or comments? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. With that, I will call on our Provost Emsley to have some other items for discussion.
We have two information items before we move on to the first. I'd like to follow up on Gary's comments regarding our efforts to reach out to the students at Mid-Continent University. I'm going to again call out Sharon Hunter, Stacey Biggs, and all the marketing team and our admissions team. It's been a wonderful partnership throughout the year, but especially in responding to this initiative. As Gary pointed out, about 2,000 students at Mid-Continent, approximately 300 will graduate on a ceremony on May 10, which leaves a little bit less than 2,000 looking to finish their degrees. I have a kind of action plan that we put together here. I'll just summarize the high points on it. First thing to note is that many of their students are non-traditional students, 25 years or over, and many are studying online and at various locations throughout the state. So our Division of Extended Learning and Outreach is perhaps uniquely qualified to reach out to these students, and Beth Lavis is going to play a critical role. In fact, the very day this announcement was made, our Division of Extended Learning and Outreach was already receiving phone calls from students saying, what do we do? So we put a team together very quickly to produce a coordinated response. As you see in the poster, there's a website, wku.edu/transfernow. There's an email account. Same word, transfernow@wku.edu. And we'll go live with that today. There's a representative in Mayfield today informing folks of their opportunities. It's fairly complicated to do this, but the essential steps are we have to do a kind of what we call an articulation agreement where we match the courses in their academic catalog to the courses in our academic catalog to facilitate the transfer of the credit hours those students have already earned. and a large number of people, but 10 or 12 people have been working hard over the last day or so to do that articulation, resulting in the production of what we call a super articulation agreement, which we will present at a open forum reception, open house, you know, in Mayfield next week. We are marketing, as you see, to the students. We're reaching out to the students that we are open to them transferring here. We're welcoming them here. That we will work with them with regard to their tuition in terms of providing scholarships where necessary. We'll waive the application fee for them to enroll. Many of these students will be seeking a course almost immediately in their summer term. We have a May term here, which starts shortly after commencement, and we'll be seeking to enroll students in courses as soon as then, including possibly a kind of a university experience type course to orient them to WKU and how we do things. We did approve University Senate and Academic Affairs a portfolio learning assessment, a prior learning assessment policy approximately 3 or 4 months ago, and that will prove invaluable in awarding credit to these students who may have other life experiences worthy of academic credit. I say we will be on the road next week. Brian, do we know a day yet?
We're looking for Tuesday.
We're trying to get a list of students as directory information, and so it's open record as to students, their names, the phone numbers, email. It's a little chaotic right now. We haven't been able to secure that yet, but we're working toward doing that. We're trying to identify courses that will be logical successors to the courses the students have already done. And in particular, I noticed when I was reading this, Mid-Continent has like 5 different terms throughout the year. It's very similar to our bi-term concept. They do accelerated learning, and they do compressed courses in 8 weeks or so. So it's very similar to the bi-term mode that we have in learning here. So we'll be particularly looking to identify bi-term courses for these students to take. We will price it at our tuition rate, but we will provide appropriate scholarships, our Red Tile scholarships, our Spirit Makes the Master scholarships, our transfer scholarships to these students to ensure that the cost of education remains as affordable to them as it was. And last but perhaps not least, there are, as Gary pointed out, a number of faculty who no longer are employed at Mid-Continent and who are volunteering to work with students, not only those scheduled to graduate in May 10, but those who simply need to complete courses to get grades this term. And we believe that those instructors may well be our instructors in due course. We'll reach out to them as well to see if they're willing to teach for us through our online program or even face-to-face program, and they may be, you know, one of the best ambassadors we can have. So we'll be reaching out to the faculty as well. And with that, I'll answer any questions that you may have on that before we move on.
Yeah. What do you mean reaching out to the faculty?
We will meet with the faculty. We will see if they're interested in acting as instructors, to review their credentials, if they can be, you know, SACS accredited to be considered part-time instructors, adjunct instructors, teaching our courses.
But that would go through the proper departments, through the departmental process?
Certainly, yeah.
Okay.
Are they liquidating? Is this going to a university actually be liquidated?
Oh, private? Yeah, they do it all the time.
It is. What happens to the real estate?
There isn't any.
Oh, yeah.
There has to be.
There has to be buildings.
Okay.
There's a building.
They have a campus, half a dozen buildings or so. I don't know.
There's 19 acres.
Imagine all the things. Their board took this action, I think, on Wednesday, and it was morning. Maybe the board met on Tuesday and was announced on Wednesday?
Wednesday morning.
So you can just imagine the list that they're having to put together to what do they do now.
Yeah, you see it all the time in the Chronicle, Larry, that, you know, there are small colleges that decide to, you know, board closes them down, they liquidate their assets, et cetera. But it's paper trail.
They have a physical plan. You know, a lot of theirs are online. And they also are across Kentucky doing some cohort stuff too. Those right into
us. Mr. Chair, I have a question. Provost Inslee, I applaud your efforts. It's to get an announcement like that and to organize an effort to capture these assets is extraordinary any idea is great, but without action, there is nothing. So I applaud you on that. I do have two specific questions. Number one, is there any possible indication, and Dr. Meredith, you might have to address this, about its impact that it might have? I know that a lot of times when businesses are sold or bought, you know that you can retain so many of the clientele or customers. So in the business terms, is there any indication about what we might be able to retain from these numerous students that obviously are in desperate need of education? The second question is who are our direct competition in acquiring, who is the direct competition in acquiring those students that are out there? I think if we know our competition, it's easier to address. So could you address either one of those issues, please?
I can address both. In terms of how many students, we anticipate potentially several hundred students would be enrolling as transfer students all the way up from freshmen through, you know, almost graduated seniors. We will be looking very carefully at our policies regarding transfer students to ensure we can cover students across the spectrum. And your second question, sorry.
Competition, we are, that we're, because again, you can identify your course of action by that.
The main campus in Mid-Continent is approximately 10 miles from Murray State University. And Murray has already announced that they're, you know, willing to accommodate these students too, and we applaud that. And for certain students, that may be their best option. As I mentioned earlier, many of these students do not actually reside anywhere near the Mayfield campus. They reside throughout the state. They're online students. And we believe with our strength in online programming, we'll have a large share of that market.
And does Murray offer the same
Murray, I
quality
believe,
that we do? Or?
Murray will be scheduling an open house in Mayfield, I believe, on Thursday of next week. They've announced that. And I have not yet talked to my counterpart at Murray, Jay Morgan, the provost, but I intend to. And we can go into this together and make sure students are afforded the right opportunity at the right place.
Thank you.
And with that, I'll call on Brian again to give the enrollment report.
And that's one of the reasons, too, John, we're capitalizing on Tuesday. Murray's doing theirs Thursday. We get out there in front of them. Plus, our online programs are much, much stronger than probably anyone else across the state. So good things there. Just building on some of the good news, and what's coming around to you is the summer enrollment report. Feels like we were just here on March 28th, and I thank the board for participating in the Cherry Presidential Lunch and Interview Day. We've got a lot of positive feedback from families on that, so that way you all helped us do a little recruiting there, and that was greatly appreciated. Out of those 62-some-odd students interviewed, we'll select 20, and we have 19 commitments right now. I just learned of another one by email, and we'll absolutely fill all 20 of those slots before we're done. But the reason I passed the summer report around, that's as of yesterday afternoon, that's one, summer enrollment is up, but that's not the end of the story. They will continue to enroll over the next month. The most salient number on there is the freshman number, and which is 83+, so that's another indicator, that a positive indicator for fall. Enrollment management right now, this time of year, we're doing ATPs or orientations, if you will. We're gearing up yielding the admitted class. This is that kind of in-between time where we try to close the deal, and we're doing so very much so. And admissions is being aggressive, scholarship, financial aid, being very aggressive in that as well. Reaching out to a lot of parents through this cycle. Parents, we have not done a lot of that in the past. Just to give you indicators for the fall, and you don't have a fall report yet because it's too early in the process. You get that at the next board meeting. Some of these things I may have mentioned to you in the March 28th committee meeting. Admits for fall are up about 5%. Kentucky resident admits are up 6.5%, and that's important because that's some of the market share that we had a little slippage with in the past, and being more aggressive about regaining our own backyard, if you will. Again, this class, as it's starting to shape up, and we haven't even gotten through half the ATPs yet, we're continuing to attract and recruit very strong baccalaureate-seeking students with higher academic profiles, as you saw in some of the President's Scholars, and just the scholarship process overall. The new scholarships, we believe, are working. This will be our second fall that they would kick in, this fall of 14.
Yeah.
Over 1,700 scholarship offers have been awarded to students, and that is the scholarship office, so that number is doubled from in the past. Actually, it's 1,752 scholarship offers thus far. Just to give you an idea of what that scholarship class looks like, the presidential and founders were up about 2.5%, the regents up about 9%, with a red towel scholarship, 8.7%, spirit makes the master, almost 14%. So again, scholarships are working. We have 10 or 11 ATPs left in the cycle. Again, ATPs being our orientation. President spoke at one this morning. That's the largest one we've had in several years, right at 250 students. I'm talking about parents and others. And we'll do those throughout June, July, all the way up into August. Ceiling open the deal, as well as communicating by snail mail, email, phone calls, those sorts of things to the parents and families. So, sort of very optimistic and some good news here, piggybacking on what the provost and the president said. You know, feel that the fall's looking good. It's still a little early, and enrollment management is in the kind of sealing the deal right now, if you will. That's our motto for summer and fall. That summer freshman number of 83 plus is really a strong indicator as well. It's too soon to look at housing, I think, for that yet. You know, housing is another positive indicator. When we meet in June, we can give you some of those numbers as well and actual where we are in the fall. That's kind of the Cliff Notes version of where we are with EM these days. We're very, very busy. A lot of positive energy coming out of admissions. The interim directors are just cranking out ideas left and right, fast and furious. Dual enrollment, dual credit is growing, making plans for this upcoming fall semester. Of course, that feeds right into our recruitment down the road as well.
Question, Brian, any comment about Tennessee's actions to offer free community college?
We had talked about that. Tennessee's TDR and THAC and those that are there are making that move to offer free community college tuition. I think actually in some ways that might help us because we have joint admissions agreements with schools in Tennessee, particularly in Middle Tennessee, which is certainly would be within WKU's footprint. I don't know how Tennessee's financing that, so a lot of scholarships that's an intense undertaking. What we will do is it just reinforces the joint admissions of Ball State and some of the others that we're looking at there to make sure that they're in that conversation with us as well. And in our recent ACT and SAT purchases, we buy Tennessee names as well. That will take some time to see, but I really think our joint admissions is going to help with that simply because they're going to go to the community college and send the advisors, financial aid folks down to each of those places. If not more so, someone said here Monday that a major provider for us taking a large dedicated attention there. Tuesday, Mayfield, so some busy times. But ask me that in a few more months. But I think there's more positive than negative in that, I believe, for us to be able to recruit those 2-year students.
If I may follow up on that question, because I had the same question. If you could provide to the board at the next time that we meet some data, because I have no sense of how many of those volunteers stayed. And who else do we have agreements with, the Vol State system?
You have Vol State, and then there are 7 others within Kentucky. And
yeah, I knew about those, but Tennessee is the Vol State, right?
Tennessee is our biggest one right here in our backyard.
Okay, so yeah, if you could provide some information, because I just have no sense of how many transfer students we're getting from Vol State who take advantage of that opportunity, because I just kind of like to see what the scenarios would be.
We can give you transfers from Tennessee, specifically Ball State, and you know, we may even want to entertain Nashville State, Community College, and some of those as well.
Sure.
We're just going to continue growing those joint admissions. It keeps us in those schools on a regular basis, but yes, absolutely, we get you that.
Great, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Brian, would you care to comment about the international students and where you see that going? We've had a big jump in that.
In the last few years, we've seen somewhere in the neighborhood of 43% growth in internationals. The international operation is rolling very aggressively. week. We had a very successful program with the Brazilian students. And we bring in this fall here, 32, 34, somewhere in there, and expecting 90-ish this fall. Dr. Bonaguro's college has been extremely supportive, as well as Cheryl Stevens. I don't know if she's here today, as far as helping us support that. And those are fully paying government-sponsored students. So there's lots of positives on that international front that are going to continue to grow.
I guess what I really want to know is how sustainable do you think that is? I know a lot of countries, China and India, are creating these large universities, some of them online, and is that an area that we think we can maintain that type of enrollment?
We believe so. Even the international markets always could be had a chance to be volatile with changing political cultures, but with the institutions we're partnering with in China and even within the Middle East and other places, there's no indicators there that we would lose any ground with that. But again, it is the climate could change, but we're not slowing down and making and building those partnerships. And those students are high income. On a different note, they're still retaining some of the highest levels. On travel and ocean, they're probably going to stay with us here. We put a lot of time hand-holding in those students as well.
Philip, I just read a report yesterday from a national, a U.S. national, international enrollment organization. And I agree with the assessment that was brought forth in that article. In another generation or two, some countries may catch up, but right now there just aren't enough universities in the emerging economies, particularly in China and India, to meet their needs. Particularly in China, you got to be in the top 10% of a high school class to even have a chance to get into a college or university in China, generally speaking. And as the economy grows in some of these emerging economies like India and certainly the Middle East and some South American countries, Brazil is a great example, as wealth grows, there's more and more capacity, and the prestige of an American education is still very high. Again, in 20 or 30 years, there may be some shifting, but not on the immediate horizon.
One great strategy that Grantsville got to experience this week was we've begun an international student ambassador program from students from across the globe. Each of the colleges have ambassadors and we have been recruited. But these are from across the globe and they're going to be calling, Skyping, reaching out, go back to their country during the summer. They're going to be in this recruiting for us. Impressive group of individuals and a diversity of majors from all over. There's
going to
be some positive ground there in the coming months, so stay tuned on that.
John, did you have, from the finance and budget side of this picture, with what is taking place in Mayfield, do we have a contingency, emergency-type operational funding that we do not rob from the strategy that we laid out months ago to do these good and wonderful actions that the provost is taking care of? Is there funds to adequately support those efforts?
We do. We're not backing off on any of that.
Much of the carry-forward funds that we have for these situations are deployed in real time. We discussed a budget to do this. It's in the five-figure range. We're going to do it right, and we have to do it quickly. And the advantage of having that instant, undedicated fund around it is very useful in that regard. If I may, let me add a few comments to what Brian has said. First, regarding the summer enrollment, that freshman number is very, very significant. You notice it's up about 25%, and that's on a lower base of freshmen than the previous year. If you look at the percentage, it's up about 30%. And the Division of Extended Learning and Outreach that does our summer school has various programs in place to entice students to take summer classes, summer scholarship programs, so on, and they're obviously working extremely well. And I see this as a positive bubble that will continue to flow. As our freshmen take summer school now, you'll see it growing in the sophomore, junior years later. Second, I want to comment on transfer students. Not simply from mid-continent, we're going to see a major emphasis on recruiting transfer students. The President may wish to comment. There was a transfer student fair about 2 weeks ago. in Lexington, I believe. And we already lead the comprehensives in Kentucky in the number of transfer students. We were called out as a model for how to do this with our joint admission agreements and so forth, but we will continue to aggressively push for transfer students in addition to growing the freshman class. And third, regarding Regent Bell's comments about international students, I want to particularly mention our Navitas partnership again. We have Navitas numbers updated. They're not only on track, but above what we were, you know, projecting. We're very much on track to grow that program. I did take a trip myself to Dubai and to Perth, Australia, to talk to Navitas agents and representatives. We made some changes to our procedures upon return from that trip. As we're learning new dynamics and new markets, it just have to change the way we're doing things a little bit, which we have. And the Navitas folks talked to me last week and said they're very, very pleased with the changes that have been made, and the numbers are reflecting that. So we expect that element of our international market to continue to grow, in addition to the other elements that Brian mentioned.
Yeah. Dr. Meredith, can I follow up? Please go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say we've made it where it's same day, if not same morning turnaround on some of those applications, because with internationals, whoever can get that I-20 to them first wins the game.
I want to follow up on Dr. Bale's questions about the support services that we provide for international students. Could you talk to us a little bit about that, please?
In the last 6 or 8 months, ISSS, we've done some reorganizing there. ISSS, what used historically to be ISSS, is now ISO, International Student Office. Hired a director in the past year, Stephanie C. Green, and have her and her staff doing programmatic, very aggressive programmatic, and I won't say the word intrusive, but close to that with our international student population. We were working with and had even meetings recently with some of our deans on how to, you know, what do the faculty need in help working with international students within the classroom, as far as, and then also what to do with them outside the classroom, you know, when they suffer from homesickness mm-hmm. or counseling needs or the litany of things that any student would need, but particularly students that come across an ocean. So that's all ramped up in the last 6 or 8 months, and we'll continue to do so. And Rob and Stephanie and his team have really done a great job with that. There's been a lot of support with the Administrative Council on that as well. So you're going to see more and more programming.
We just made some decisions this week to step up international advising, and that's a whole different advising dynamic for international students than it is for domestic or in-state students, because they're going through a lot of emotional dynamics, personal and academic, and so the whole advising process is different for international students, and we're really putting some emphasis on that.
And the colleges received that pretty well, too, with the first semester, too, maybe even 3 semesters, having them work closely with ARC and then ease them into the colleges from there, just so they can have like the novice concept of soft landing.
Okay. Other thing?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian? Our second information item relates to scholar development. WKU becomes more and more a destination of choice for high-achieving students. Our Honors College enrollment is, you know, through the roof. We are waitlisting students who want to get into Honors College. I think it's important to provide those students who clearly have the talents to succeed a mechanism to go forward and earn appropriate recognition for their efforts. So that's called the Office of Scholar Development. We've made some major investments in that office over the last 2 or 3 years, not the least of which is hiring Audra Jennings. And Audra directs the office. As you may recall, last year we had over 30 prestigious national scholarships awarded to our students. And to give a report on this year, here's Audra.
So it is still very early in the announcement cycle for national scholarships, so we will continue to have announcements throughout the month of April, throughout the month of May, possibly into June, although we hope that various federal agencies don't wait that long. at this point, I would say that it is safe to say that the 2013-2014 academic year is shaping up to be another year of record achievement for WKU and students applying for national scholarships. We had 108 students apply for over 130 nationally competitive awards. So last year, WKU students earned national recognition 29 times in scholarship competitions measured in the strategic plan. Our goal was 20. This year, already, students have earned national recognition 28 times in competitions measured in that plan, and we are still waiting for final announcements from Boren, Fulbright, Gilman. That will be our spring competition. Our goal for this year was 24, so we have already exceeded that measure. If we look at national scholarships more broadly, 29 students earned 35 national, earned recognition in 35 national scholarship competitions, or 35 times in national scholarship competitions. Because I can't give you final numbers, I want to give you a few highlights. I would be happy to provide a final report at a later date. In recent years, WKU has been leading the state in recognition in the Gold Water competition. We are allowed to nominate 4 students each year. 3 of our 4 students earned Goldwater scholarships. The 4th earned an honorable mention in the competition. So just to give you a context for that, 17 other schools in the country matched or topped that record. So we did very well in the Goldwater competition. We had our first ever finalists for the very competitive Rhodes, Marshall, and Gates Cambridge scholarships. So the selection rate for those scholarships range from 3% to 5%, and WKU had its first finalist. For the 3rd year in a row, we had a finalist for the prestigious Harry S. Truman Scholarship. We had our first student to be selected for the National Institutes of Health Oxford-Cambridge Scholars Program, which funds doctoral study at Oxford or Cambridge and provides research opportunities at the NIH. The Fulbright U.S. Student Program selects grantees in a 2-part process. So finalists are selected by committees in the United States, and then recipients are selected by committees in the individual countries. As a result, we have a wide range of announcements, or a time frame on announcements. So finalists are named in January. Individual countries announce anywhere from March to June. We had a record number of 10 finalists to 8 different countries. So far, 3 students have been selected for Fulbright grants. 2 have been named alternates. 4 students are waiting for final announcements. For a 2nd year in a row, a WKU student earned a Fulbright grant for the United Kingdom, one of the most competitive Fulbright grants in the world. We had a record number of students, 6, receive critical language scholarships, which allow students to participate in intensive language study programs during the summer. Additionally, we had a 7th student who was selected as an alternate. The languages were Chinese, Arabic, and Korean. So now it is my pleasure to introduce you to a few students who have earned national scholarships during their time at WKU. First, I would ask Chad Coomer to come forward. Chad Coomer is a biology and chemistry major. This year, he is a recipient of a Fulbright grant to the United Kingdom and the National Institutes of Health Oxford-Cambridge Scholarship. In the past, he earned a Goldwater Scholarship. Chad began research at WKU as a first-year student through the Genome Discovery and Exploration course. After the course, he continued to conduct research with Dr. Rodney King. Additionally, he spent 2 summers conducting HIV research at the National Cancer Institute. Chad founded the OSC Ambassadors. Additionally, he served as camp counselor for Rocket Power, a program designed to introduce elementary school students to the career. And is a peer-assisted study session leader in chemistry. In fall, he will begin a master's degree program at University College London. The following year, he will begin his studies through the NIH Oxford-Cambridge Scholars Program at Oxford. Next.
He is also a musician.
Yes. Yes, Chad plays violin. Very accomplished.
And went to China with the orchestra last May.
Many of us got the opportunity to meet Chad at an event, and an engaging young man as well. look forward to him receiving the first Nobel Prize winner. Western.
No pressure.
So next, I would like to ask Clarice Esch to come forward. So Clarice Esch is majoring in horticulture. This year, she was named a semi-finalist for the prestigious Mitchell Scholarship, and she is one of our Fulbright finalists who is yet to hear a final outcome. Sadly, Costa Rica has a wide range of announcement times historically, so she has about a three-month window in which she might hear news. In the past, she was named a Goldwater Scholar and an EPA Greater Research Opportunities Fellow. She has spent 15 months abroad conducting research in Costa Rica, studying Spanish in Ecuador, and volunteering in Honduras. Here at WKU and abroad, her research is focused on finding plant-based sustainable fertilization methods. She is active in environmental cleanup and water conservation efforts in the area and helps to organize contra dances in her home community. She will begin her PhD studies at Michigan State University in the fall. Hannah Garland is majoring in International Affairs in Asian Religions and Cultures. She is also a member of the Chinese Flagship Program. This year, Hannah was named a finalist for the highly competitive Truman Scholarship. In the past, she earned a U.S. Department of State Critical Language Scholarship for Chinese. Hannah has studied abroad in China and Australia and volunteered at an orphanage in China for children with disabilities. She is a recipient of the FUSE Grant for research on children's rights. John Hendry is a biochemistry major. Since he transferred to WKU in 2012, John has conducted research with Dr. Kevin Williams in the chemistry department. This year, John earned both a Fulbright grant and a DAD study scholarship to continue the research he began in Germany as a recipient of the DAD research internship in science and engineering last summer. So he is in the difficult position of deciding which award to take. His research in Germany focuses on developing better training tools for laparoscopic surgery. Additionally, John conducted research through the NSF Research Experience for Undergraduates Program. Megan LaFoon is a biology major and a member of the Chinese Flagship Program. She received a Goldwater Scholarship for her research on a common water and soil problem in China. She was one of just 17 students from five continents selected to participate in a United Nations-funded workshop on water resources in China. Megan will study abroad in Taiwan over the summer. She's also a FUSE Grant recipient. Bailey Mack is an International Affairs and Spanish major and member of the Chinese Flagship. This year, she is a recipient of the Critical Language Scholarship for Chinese. And she is one of our Fulbright finalists who has yet to hear a final outcome. China is usually one of the last countries to announce. Bailey is also waiting on news from the Boren Scholarship. In the past, she earned the Pearson Prize for Higher Education, the Phi Kappa Phi Study Abroad Scholarship, and the Girl Scout Gold Award, among other awards. She has held internships with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars and the Alive Center. She is active in Omega Phi Alpha, a service sorority. She has studied abroad twice in Taiwan and once in Peru, and she will spend the next year in China. Thank you. Any questions?
Well done, Dr. Jennings. Well done.
Mr. Provost, do you have any other information items? Well, Dr. Jennings, we thank you for bringing the students. It certainly helps us keep focused on why we're all here, and thanks to all the students for being here. Chairman, that concludes the business of the academic committee.